Good evening, everybody. Good evening. I'm very excited to get back into the Tuesday night series, and I'm very, very excited about our new topic, the Legacy Series, which is a journey through the lives of our greatest leaders. Tonight will be an introduction to the series. I think maybe tonight and next week we'll do more general understanding, appreciation of what we're doing and why we're doing it, and then we'll jump into our first personality. I remember going back now probably 20-something years ago, I had a conversation with Rav Binyamin Luban, who's the Rosh Hashiva in Toras Chaim, in North Miami Beach. I was in Eretz Yisrael with him his last year that he was teaching in Eretz Yisrael before he moved to Florida. And when he moved to Florida, I, together with a group of friends who were in yeshiva with him in Eretz Yisrael, we joined him in Miami. And I remember asking him, what was the most difficult part of that transition? He was living together with his family in Eretz Yisrael probably for 13, 14 years, and then moving from the heart of Yerushalayim to North Miami Beach is not simple. And he told me that the most difficult thing for him personally was not having the opportunity to be around as many gedolim. He took full advantage of many of the gedolim in Eretz Yisrael, and that was almost a connection to the Mesorah, hearing from people who had such a vast knowledge and a depth of Torah was something that was a lifeline. And he shared with us that was probably the most difficult thing for him in his transition from Eretz Yisrael to North Miami Beach. Being around Gedolim is something that you can't describe in words. There's no formula or equation to get you to that point of connection or inspiration. Just being in the presence of someone who's so connected, that itself just infuses the soul with light. The goal of this series, although we can't travel back in time and meet some of these incredible people, but the goal is from a very, very far distance to get a little bit of a glimpse, a little bit of an insight into some of these incredible lives, to be able to touch that feeling, that light that can transform the neshama. Rabbi Yecheskel Levenstein, who is the Mashgiach of the Mir, he writes that one of the most powerful ways we can elevate ourselves is not so much in concept or in theory, those are also needed, but it's when we see and we experience great people or ordinary people doing great things, that has an impact on me that reading a Musar Sefer is not going to do. He quotes the famous Gemara in Brachas that says, Gedola Shimusha Yoser Melimuda, that one gains more from their interaction with the Gadol, even more than the technical learning. And the Gemara later on in Bracha says, Afilu Kara Vashana, even someone who learned a lot and is very knowledgeable, Velo Shimesh Talmidei Chachamim, but if he never had the opportunity to serve great men, he's an Amoritz, he's ignorant. Because you're lacking the reality of Torah if you don't see it, if you don't experience it firsthand. The example that Rabbi Yecheskel quotes is something that he heard from the author of Kelm, Rabbi Simcha Zisel, one of the great disciples of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. The author of Kelm would often quote the Rashi, who brings from the Gemara that what allowed Yosef to overcome the greatest challenge of his life was Sheniris lo demus diyukno shel aviv. As he was about to fail, he was about to sin, it wasn't classic mantras of Yira Shemayim that held him back. It was seeing the face of his father. That image of his father inspired him, that gave him the strength to be able to overcome that particular challenge. So in a sense, what our goal is through this series is to create that demus diyukno, to have the image of some of these great people learning about their lives and then having it become more of a reality in our life. I'll tell you the complexity and I guess the main struggle that we're going to face. Light travels at 186,000 miles per second. That's very fast. So a light year, right, is how many miles light travels in a year? And the answer to that question is about 6 trillion miles, right? So one light year is 6 trillion miles. The distance from the sun to Earth is generally 93 million miles away, and therefore it takes the light of the sun a little more than 8 minutes to reach planet Earth. So that means whatever is happening in the sun, when we're looking up into the sky, right, when we had the eclipse and we were wearing special glasses looking at the sun, whatever we were seeing was really what took place 8 minutes ago. Time travels fast. Our solar system, for example, is about 12 trillion miles wide. So if one light year is 6 trillion miles, that means our solar system is about 2 light years. How big is our galaxy? How wide is the Milky Way? It's about 100,000 light years wide. So 100,000 light years, each light year is 6 trillion. Let's do the math quickly. All right, so that equals 6 quintillion. Quintillion is 18 zeros. And our galaxy is only one of what's estimated to be between 200 billion and 2 trillion galaxies in our vast and expanding universe. So for centuries, we had developed different technology to be able to look into the cosmos, and we developed the telescope. What was unique about the Hubble Space Telescope? Why was it able to capture pictures of the universe that we never had before? And the simple answer is because it was the first high-power telescope that was actually in space. There's something called atmospheric distortion, which is when you're standing on planet Earth, no matter how strong that telescope is, you're going to have to pierce through the atmosphere, which is very difficult to do, to be able to get a clear picture of what's happening in outer space. When the telescope itself is past the atmosphere, so then it has more of a clarity. So the Hubble Space Telescope was launched in 1990, and that was the greatest form that we had as a civilization to peer into the cosmos until the end of 2021. 2021, the James Webb Space Telescope went into orbit around the sun, orbiting a million miles above the Earth. And the James Webb Telescope has the ability to see 13.6 billion light years away. So again, just to do the math, if one light year is 6 trillion miles, so 6 trillion times 13.3 billion is a very big number with a lot of zeros. The problem, or the challenge that we face, whenever we open the chapter of any Gadol B'Yisrael, is the fact that we have atmospheric distortion. There is so much between us and this human being that we're trying to analyze and learn from and be inspired by. How do we even see you? How can we even talk about the Chidah? How can we explore the world of the Ramban? It becomes almost an impossible task. So on one hand, like Rav Chaskel said, being able to learn and be inspired from the stories of our Gedolim and get a little bit of a glimpse of who they were can be transformative, but how do we even see them? when they're so far away? We're so distant from who they are, who they were. And the Gemara in Shabbos says, Im Rishonim b'nei Melachim, if we view the earlier generations as if they were the children of angels, then Anu b'nei Anashim, then we're considered men, we're human. Im Rishonim b'nei Anashim, but if we look at the earlier generations as if they were just mortal men, regular human beings, then Anu kachamorim, then we're like donkeys. I want to explore what this Gemara means. There's a lot here. There are many layers of understanding. But clearly the idea is we have to be very careful in how we relate to the earlier generations. When we speak about the Vilna Gaon, when we analyze Rabbi Akiva Eiger, when we learn from the Mesiras Nefesh of Rabbi Akiva, if we view them as human, then we're not even human. What does that mean? The Gemara also says in Erevin that Liban shel Rishonim kepischa shel Ulam v'shel Achronim kepischa shel Heichol. The heart of the earlier generations, it was so much more vast and expansive. The heart of the later generations was more bitzimtzum, it was narrow. And then Anu, us, and this is the Gemara speaking, going back 1500 years ago, Kimelo nekiv machat tzidekis. We're like the opening, the size of a needle. So this is obviously in line with the perspective of Yeridas Hadoros, that we believe as the generations descend from the Maimon Har Sinai experience, the capacity, right, of the neshama, not that the neshama itself is diminished. The neshama is always in full force. But the layers of atmosphere that surround the neshama, as we go farther and farther away from the source of our light and the source of our Torah, the less connected we're able to feel, the less clarity we have. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, we know, was one of the students of the Chafetz Chaim. And Rabbi Chanan Wasserman said about himself, even though he was one of the Chafetz Chaim's Talmidim, he said, I'm not even worthy to be called the disciples of the disciples of the Chafetz Chaim. I have no connection to him. We're in different worlds. And he went on to explain what the Gemara means, that if we view the earlier generations like angels, then we're human. But if we view them as human, then we're like animals. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman said, it's not putting us down. It's not calling us names if we have a distorted view of what the earlier generations were, but it's telling us qualitatively, it's almost as if we're a different species. The example that Rav Chanan shared, he said, let's say for argument's sake, you have one really wealthy person in the city, and he has millions of dollars. And then you have millions of other people, and they only have a few dollars. But theoretically, if you were to gather them all together, they would also have millions of dollars. Because they're in the same sug, they're the same currency, so to speak. If you're missing one person for a minion, you gotta find that one guy. However, if you look outside and there's only a chamor, even if you bring in 20 or 40 donkeys, it's not going to help you because it's a different species. Explain Rav Chanan Wasserman, what the Gemara is telling us is that we relate to the Rishonim, to the earlier generations, as Melachim. If we view them as loftier and qualitatively different than we are, so then that means we're human. We have the proper havchana. We could discern who we are and who they are. If we treat the earlier ones like regular mortal human beings, and we could analyze what they're saying and choose to agree or disagree, but we don't approach it with the same reverence, with the same sense of awe, so then we're like a behemoth, right? We don't know anything. I remember I mentioned on Shabbos my relationship with Reb David Grumman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And I recall when I was probably 13 years old and I was learning with him in the kol, it was time for mincha. And I was just starting to get into the habit of davening. So I had my siddur and I was looking inside, trying to follow along. And I looked over at Rabbi Grumman during mincha and I saw something incredible. He was davening Shmona Esrei by heart. And I thought to myself, this man must be a gadol. He knows the whole Shmona Esrei by heart. And I didn't realize at the time that pretty much if you're 11 or 12 and you've been going to yeshiva your whole life, you also know the entire Shmona Esrei by heart. But from where I was and what I was looking at, it was difficult to discern what makes somebody great. So we have this challenge. We're stuck here on planet Earth, far away from these stars and galaxies. Analyzing and even being inspired by them is not a simple task. I want to share with you, there's a beautiful introduction from the Ben Ish Chai. The Ben Ish Chai, Rabbi Yosef Chai in Baghdad, he lived in the 1800s. He has a tshuva sefer, Rav Pa'alim, and in the introduction to his first volume on page 3, he spends time discussing different types of authors when it comes to tshuva svarim. He says, for example, you have some who write with extreme humility, and if they're arguing on something, they'll say, I don't fully understand what Rabbi Akiva Eger meant, and they'll leave off Tzorech Iyun, which means it requires more analysis. And then you have others who write with a harifus. They write with a strength, with a clarity, almost to the point where it sounds disparaging. Yedabru kashos neged chachmei dor shekodmu lehem. They speak with harshness, even against generations prior, as if they're certain that their position is correct and the other is not correct. Ube'emes minigzeh, the truth is, this way of writing, it's a tos ve'einenu nachon. It's a mistake and it's incorrect. And then he gives an interesting example. He says, if you look back to the Marshal, when did the Marshal live, Rav Shlomo Luria? He lived in the 1500s. He was during the same time period as the Shulchan Aruch, as the Rama. He was older than the Rama. However, writes the Ben Ish Chai, that if you look at some of the wording of the Marshal, for example, look in his tshuva tzadiches, she'etiach devarim neged ma'or ha'olam, that he speaks with a lack of respect against the light of the world, the holy Tana, the Rashbi, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. What did the Marshal say? He wrote that even if theoretically Rav Shimon Bar Yochai would come down from Shemayim and he would tell me that I'm wrong, I wouldn't change my opinion. Because this is how I learned the sugya, this is how I understand what the halacha is, this is what I feel the majority of Rishonim are saying, and therefore I wouldn't even pay attention to what the Rashbi said. Now, that perspective itself is not surprising. We do have a concept, Torah lo b'shamayim hi, which means, even if there's a bas kol, there's a heavenly voice that tells you that the halacha is, it's tahor, and you assume, based on your methodology of learning, that it's tameh, or the bas kol says it's asur, and you assume it's mutter. Torah lo b'shamayim, we don't care what the bas kol says. However, the Ben Ish Chai is pointing out, the way he references the Rashbi, he doesn't do so with respect. He says, v'choshev shir gagal chama hazoreach hakol ha'olam kulo. It's almost as if he's looking at the sun, which is giving light to the entire world, And he's viewing it from the human perspective, meaning if you were to ask a 7-year-old child, how big is the sun? They would say, this big. So Lahavdil, says the Ben Ish Chai, it sounds like the Marshal is doing that in his perception of the Rashbi. Im Rishonim Kamalachim, he quotes the Gemara that if we view the earlier generations as angels, then we're called human. But if we view them as human, and I reference the Rashbi as if we're contemporaries, so that means I'm lacking my ability to discern between who I am and where I am and who these great people were. Now, what's ironic about this particular piece in the Ben Ish Chai? He's doing the exact same thing that he's calling out the Marshal for doing. He's calling out the Marshal, how can you speak like that about the Rashbi? He was in a whole different time period. Okay, but you, the Ben Ish Chai, you're one of the great minds of the 1800s. But how do you have the right to be able to talk like this about the Marshal, who lived hundreds of years prior? But the idea here is that it is so embedded, it is so ingrained in our way of thinking and our Mesorah that there needs to be a sense of reverence and awe for the Gedolim of previous generations. I'm even comfortable saying about someone who lived hundreds of years earlier, if I see them speaking with a lack of respect for someone who came earlier, I'll call them out. That's our Mesorah. That's our perspective. We need to have the proper reverence for Gedolei Yisrael. We have to treat them like angels. Now, we're not going to go on the rest of the piece, but he has very interesting things to say as well about the Marshal's perspective on the Shulchan Aruch. And that's very fascinating. The Shulchan Aruch was not hundreds of years prior. Shulchan Aruch was a contemporary of the Marshal. I want to jump, though. Here's where we have a dichotomy. On one hand, how can we even talk about these great people? We can't see them, we're so far away. What's the danger, though, in viewing Gedolim as mamish angels? Viewing them almost as if they're like a different entity. Why is that not a healthy thing? Because then I'm not going to learn from you. I can be inspired from another human being who has similar struggles and nisyonos, and they're able to persevere and they're able to overcome. I can be inspired by that. But if I'm viewing the Chofetz Chaim or Rabbi Akiva Eiger, if I'm viewing these personalities as a whole different species, they're malachim. So I can't learn from you, I'm just human. So there's also a danger in viewing Gedolim as angels. And this is actually pointed out in a very famous letter of Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner is writing a letter to a young man who was feeling very dejected, very disappointed in himself. He had aspirations of being a Gadol B'Yisrael, and over the years in yeshiva, he just wasn't finding it. And he was distracted by so many of the challenges that this world has to present. So he wrote to Rav Huttner complaining and expressing his anguish. We're not going to read the whole letter together. This happens to be a beautiful example of how a Rebbe can encourage and really just breathe life into a Talmud, the way he speaks to this young man, the way he's mechazek him, he builds him up. It's a beautiful letter. Rav Huttner, though, says as follows. He says, you should know there's ra chola hi etzleinu. There's a very difficult illness that we all face. Whenever we speak about the great accomplishments and the personality and the Torah of our Gedolim, what do we focus on? we focus on the Sikum HaAchron, who they eventually became. And in the conversations and the biographies, we skip over all of the internal struggle, all of the inner turmoil. We don't talk about that. Rav Huttner says, think for a moment of the greatest saint amongst our Gedolim of the last century and a half. What comes to mind? Who comes to mind? The Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim, he couldn't hear Lashon Hara. But think about how many struggles did the Chafetz Chaim have as he was developing himself. How many times did, yes, even the Chafetz Chaim fail and make a mistake and then catch himself and then try harder next time and then feel guilty about falling again, but then picking himself up? Can you say that about the Chafetz Chaim? Of course you can say that about the Chafetz Chaim, because he was also a human being. The greatness of the Chafetz Chaim was the fact that although he was human, he was able to elevate himself to an angelic level. But nobody talks about that, says Rav Huttner. You're someone, as he's addressing this young man, you're a Baal Ruach. You're a spirited individual. You have she'ifos, you have lofty ambitions. And therefore you're thinking, whenever you fail, whenever you're struggling, whenever you're getting involved with things you shouldn't really be getting involved with, you no longer view yourself on that path of becoming great. Says Rav Huttner, it's time for a paradigm shift. And this paradigm shift is transformative. The paradigm shift is, instead of feeling closer to the Chafetz Chaim or closer to Rav Moshe Feinstein, when you're sitting in yeshiva at the table with the Gemara open and you're learning well, that's wonderful. But when you're in that makom nisayo, where you're not sitting at the table with the Gemara open, but you are struggling, or even when you just failed, or you said something that was so insensitive and now you have regret, at that moment when you have those pangs of anguish and you want to get better, you want to improve, then you should feel closer to the Chafetz Chaim. You should feel more similar to Rav Moshe Feinstein. Those are the moments in life when you're broken that build you. When you're just going b'shalvas ha-nefesh, when things are smooth and tranquil, that's not the building blocks of greatness. So how do we, on one hand, we have this mandate. We have to view our gedolim like malachim, almost as if they're a different species, and therefore how can we even speak about or be inspired through them? And then on the other hand, we have the warning of Rav Huttner. If we view them as totally a different entity, so then we're not going to be inspired by them, because that's not me. You have to understand that even the Gedolei Yisrael, they're also human. So I think the answer, and I think this is going to be our guiding mantra and methodology as we go throughout this series, is what Rabbi Chanan Wasserman said at the eulogy of the Chafetz Chaim. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman was actually in London at the time when the Chafetz Chaim passed away in 1933. But the eulogy he said, he started by saying that when it comes to learning Chumash is an amazing thing. You have kids coming home from school in the first and second grade, and they're learning Parshas Lech Lecha. And then you have someone who's in Beis Medrash and Kolel, and he's learning Parshas Lech Lecha. And then you have Rebbe Yoshev when he was in his 80s and his 90s, and he's learning Parshas Lech Lecha. How is it possible that you have so many different people from such a wide spectrum learning the exact same limud. So said Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, obviously, everyone's learning it on their own level, according to their capacity. So when a child's first learning how to read the words, that's an incredible accomplishment. And then they get a little bit older, and they're teaching, they're translating the words. And then you start learning Rashi and the Ramban. And then, theoretically, you have someone like the Vilna Gaon, where at the end of his life, he would just sit there with the Chumash, and he would learn Chumash. But as he was learning Chumash, every pasuk, every word, he was thinking all the different Gemaras and Chazal that relate to this, all the different opinions that we have in the Mishnayos. His learning of Chumash is very different than our learning of Chumash. Said Rav Chanan Wasserman, the same thing is true when we approach the Chafetz Chaim. There's nobody here, there's nobody alive that fully understood who the Chafetz Chaim was. The only way to have a real glimpse into the inner world of the Chafetz Chaim was to be at least on a similar level. And no one among us is on a similar level. And the analogy, I think, is so incredible. The only way to have a little bit of an insight into this galaxy versus that galaxy and that star versus that star is if you're way, way into space, way above the atmosphere. But we're not. So for us, they all look pretty similar. They're all little dots in the sky. Rav Chanan Wasserman said, even though nobody living among us can understand who the Chafetz Chaim was, we could all choose to live a life like the Chafetz Chaim lived. The famous Rambam, he quotes in Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam says, Kol Adam Roi Lios Tzadik Moshe Rabbeinu. Every single human being has the capacity to be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. Ask Rav Chanan Wasserman, how is that possible to say? The Torah itself tells us, Lo kam be Yisrael kamosha, that no one's ever going to rise up and klal Yisrael like Moshe Rabbeinu. But yet everyone could be a tzaddik like Moshe. So Rav Chanan said, Lo kam be Yisrael means that there's never going to be someone with the clarity of prophecy like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe was in his own world, his own realm, his own league when it came to Nevuah. But to be a tzaddik, to be someone who's viewed be'enei Hashem in the eyes of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, just as righteous as Moshe Rabbeinu, everyone could do that. Because what made Moshe special was the fact that although he was human and he did have struggles, And tendencies like any other human being, he was able to develop himself and work his whole life to become an Eved Hashem, totally devoted to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, totally devoted to Klal Yisrael. And that, said Rav Chanan, that's something we could all do. So of course we don't understand Moshe Rabbeinu, and we don't even understand the Chafetz Chaim who just passed away. But we could learn from their lives, we could be inspired to be as devoted, to be as moser, to be as invested as these great individuals were. Sometimes, especially when you're younger and more ambitious, when you learn about somebody great, you have a tendency to copy what they do. I remember, right, not that long ago, after Rav Chaim Kanievsky passed away, Zecher Tzadik V'Kodesh Levracha, and one of the big conversations in the Torah world was analyzing his daily chovos, his routine, how much did he learn per day? And you had some even young 17, 18-year-old Bachrim who were now inspired to learn not that much, but to learn much, much more, to the point where it wasn't healthy for their development. It wasn't where they should have been at that point in their life. So sometimes when we're inspired, we copy instead of emulate. And this is a very important caveat as we approach this world of getting a glimpse into our Gedolim. Revolba tells us, Revolba writes that the idea of Shimush Talmidei Chachamim, being able to serve and learn from those greater than ourselves, it's about expanding one's mind and expanding your heart, not diminishing it, not becoming less human, not becoming robotic. It's not about chikui. Chikui is the Hebrew word for a copycat. Don't just do something because you see someone greater than yourself doing that thing. It might not be the right thing for you. It might be detrimental for you. Bar das nizhar mechikui bedevorim she'einam hol mimes madrigoso. A bar das, one who has his intellect leading the way, he's very careful not to allow himself to do something that's too many steps above and beyond where he's presently holding. Aval hu bona es chayav al hashikol habori. But rather, he builds his life on the healthy, ongoing assessment of how can I learn from my Rebbeim? How can I learn from people in the present or even people in the past to be inspired by their actions, to find a new sense of commitment within myself from their loyalty and their Mesiras Nefesh, but understanding what works for me, what's right for me. One of my favorite stories is with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He was, as a younger bacher, probably 18 years old, he would daven at the Kosel every Motzoi Shabbos. There was a beautiful minyan there led by a very holy person, Rav Zarach Braverman, and the minyan Motzoi Shabbos would go for almost an hour, which by itself was an incredible thing. Any 18-year-old kid choosing Motzoi Shabbos to daven at a Maariv that will last almost an hour, unheard of. And he went there every Motzei Shabbos until, for some reason, he just stopped going. Years later, he was having a conversation with one of his nephews, and this minyan came up in the conversation. So he asked Rav Shlomo Zalman, whatever happened? I remember you would go there every Motzei Shabbos, you looked forward to it. Rav Shlomo Zalman said, that's true. I loved that minyan. However, there was one Motzei Shabbos when Rav Zarach Breverman wasn't there, and there was somebody else, very chashuv person, leading the Maariv instead of Rav Breverman. And Rav Breverman would always do certain gestures and motions. Chiheim chayenu, he would pick up his hands. And the person who was leading the davening did the exact same motions as Rav Zarach Braverman. And at that point I realized, I don't feel so comfortable here anymore. Meaning to say that Rav Shlomo Zalman saw there was a sense of chikui, of just copying in a way that wasn't as natural, and he didn't feel connected to that. He didn't feel comfortable with that. So our goal is, we view the Gedolim like Melachim. And that's why, and I think this is a very crucial part of our entire mission together, we're not going to have broad brushstrokes of defining who this person was in contrast to that person. The Rambam was like this, and the Gro was like that. You can't have that clarity on stars and galaxies when you have the atmospheric distortion. Our goal is, oftentimes through their own words, through their own diaries, through their own svarim, to get a little bit of a glimpse into their inner world. Not to copy what they did, but to be inspired, to have a sense of hischadshus, to see what a human being can accomplish with the same struggles that I have. the angelic heights that a human being can accomplish. Mirtz Hashem, we should be zocha, to be inspired together. Shkoyach.